maximum daily loads implementation status report, Ms. Kinnaman.
Yes, this is going to, I will give the board an overview of where we are on our TMDLs. And as you recall, this came up in the presentation last night, it's one of sort of reviews of our programs. So Richard Booth will be handling this presentation. I'll hand it off to him.
Thank you. Thank you and good morning, Jeff Cox, other members of the board, staff, and members of the public. The few that there are. My name is Richard Booth. I am the unit chief of the TMDL Basin Planning Unit here in the South Lake Tahoe office. I'm going to explain our TMDL implementation status reports this morning. But before I begin, I want to point out the late revisions that were handed out previously. For the public, there are copies on the table at the back. There are three items in the late revision. One is a page to replace your second page of the green sheet, Bates page 9-3. This late revision adds a paragraph, provides a little more detail for some of these status reports. You also have a one-page report on the Truckee River TMDL. It's from the State Board, and it's similar to our own status reports. I'll explain the difference in a bit. And finally, you have a hard copy of my presentation. Okay, TMDL, total maximum daily load. How much pollution can a water body have before any of its beneficial uses are no longer supported? The implementation status reports are an effective way that the TMDL staff tells everyone what TMDL implementation actions...
Pardon the interruption. Your conference contains less than three participants at this time. If you would like to continue, press star one now.
Okay. Did we have participants? So these reports talk about the actions that take place in the field. It tells who's doing the work, how they're reporting the work, and whether water quality is improving by meeting its targets. Now, this is an informational item, workshop style, so please feel free to ask questions as we go along. So I want to talk a little bit about the development of a TMDL before I launch into the part about implementation. Okay, first step. We want to know who the people are that are responsible for water quality impairments. Who wants to participate in measuring and improving the water quality? These are some of the stakeholders. Step one. Step two, we need to assess the water body. What is the impairment to the water body's water quality? What's causing it? Where is it coming from? This is all part of the assessment. Step three, how much pollutant, which we call the loading, the mass per time, is coming into the water body, and from what sources are these coming from, what we call the allocation. Step four, what can be done to reduce or eliminate the pollution of each of these allocations? How long will it take to meet a target? These actions become part of the implementation plan. And then finally, we amend the basin plan to put these TMDLs and the implementation plans into the basin plan. One way I can think of even summarizing these steps further is the first step is to identify and assess. Identify the problem, assess what it is. And the second step is to restore the water quality. And this is done through the implementation plan. These steps are documented and adopted into the basin plan with your approval after significant public input. Just because an implementation plan is in the basin plan, that does not mean that the stakeholders or the implementers will automatically go out into the field and start implementing and start their restoration projects. The implementers who are identified in the implementation plan must be required to perform the work via orders or permits or waste discharge requirements or waivers and so forth. Although in one case we have a voluntary implementer, South Tahoe PUD, who's doing the work not under a permit or an order, and I'll talk about that example here in a bit. As part of this workshop, I want to take a little time to give you a brief update of our current list of water bodies that are considered impaired. They're known as listed, from terminology to Clean Water Act, Section 303D, listed water bodies, we have 150 water body pollutant combinations. You adopted this list at the June board meeting in Bishop. State Board is scheduled to approve this list, along with all the other regions in this, early next month. Now, we're not going to do TMDLs for all 150 of these water body pollutant combinations. We're underway now, trying to figure out the best way to address these impairments of water quality. But just to give you an idea, I've lumped the pollutants into four categories. About 25% are metals, mercury, arsenic. About 25% are nutrients, that is to say nitrogen and phosphorus. About 25% are TDS and anions, TDS as in total dissolved solids, and sulfates, for example. And finally, the remaining 25% are the rest, and they include bacteria, or a pathogen listed. Sediment, low dissolved oxygen. We have some petroleum hydrocarbon impairments as well. So I'm not going to discuss this morning how we are addressing these pollutants, only to tell you that we are. Staff is currently working hard on these issues. And by the way, we're taking advantage of the warm winter we're having and dry winter by conducting an extensive sampling program to better figure out the impairments of these water bodies. That's the good news about the drought. And there's a lot of other bad news, of course. Now, in the July board meeting, we propose to come before you and present to you the result of all of this investigation that we're doing on these listed water bodies. But again, today's meeting is going to be more about implementing the current TMDLs, but I just want to get you a little excited about what we're going to come later to tell you about our current listed water bodies. Okay, I'm going to step over to the maps here on display and go through the various hydrologic units whose water bodies have been impaired. And I'm just going to point out an example or two. You folks can see this over there. And by the way, if you want to find the list of these water bodies, they're on our TMDL webpage. Click on the webpage and you'll see a link for 2012 listed water bodies. That will show you this list. So starting in the north here, we have the Surprise Valley Hydrologic Unit, and in that unit are a couple of creeks that are listed for total dissolved solids. We come down into the Susanville Hydrologic Unit here. By the way, the yellow highlighting, that just shows the water bodies or the hydrologic units that we spend most of our time on, most of our work. So Susanville has, and the Susan River itself, has some mercury and some unknown toxicity impairments. You come down into the Truckee River Hydrologic Unit. For example, Donner Lake is in there, and it's got some petroleum hydrocarbon impairments. Lake Tahoe itself, we're finding, for example, an iron impairment, but we believe that is perhaps naturally caused, and we find that in a lot of the tributaries that come into the lake. West Fork, the Carson River Hydrologic Unit, down here. We're finding in the West Fork of the Carson TDS, total dissolved solids. We're finding pathogens as well. The East Fork of the Carson, you get into the creeks that drain from Leviathan Mine, and of course we want to find metals as the impairment for those creeks. Let's drop down to the East Walker River, and these are the creeks that drain into the Bridgeport Reservoir, and we have a pathogen concern for a lot of those creeks, Buckeye Creek, Robinson, Swarver. Step over to the Owens Hydrologic Unit here, and we find, for example, in Mammoth Creek, a mercury concern, heavy reservoir of a copper concern. Amargosa Hydrologic Unit, this is this big one out here. The Amargosa River itself has an arsenic concern, as does Mesquite Springs. Searles Lake, Serenity, interestingly enough. The Antelope Hydrologic Unit down here in the southern part, Little Rock Reservoir has mercury and PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, petroleum hydrocarbon impairment. And finally, the Mojave Hydrologic Unit. The Mojave River itself, for example, has TDS impairments.
Are we listing Searles Lake? I'm sorry?
Is Searles Lake listed?
Yes, Searles Lake is listed. Yeah, okay. I was hoping I could slide past that. Searles Lake is listed for salinity. And the reason...
Really?
Yes. And the concern there, for those of you who don't know, Searles Lake is naturally high in salinity. So the natural input to salinity for that lake has to be separated out for any other input from, for example, the Trona facility that operates there. And if they increase the salinity above and beyond what the natural amount should be, that would kick it over into a listing.
Isn't that the case? Like, who would care?
That is why we are prioritizing our work. And we take into consideration precisely those types of factors, exactly. Yeah, we have, not to digress too much, but the natural source input to our water bodies, and we've calculated there's about 15% of our water body pollutant combinations that is due to either completely to natural sources or have a significant input to the impairment from natural sources. And we are not going to waste our time trying to deal with that in some bureaucratic way. We're in conversation with State Board and US EPA on that very subject, and we're going to try to economize our time, but we're going to spend our time on the real impacts.
Richard, did you say that portions of the Mojave River were listed for TDS?
I did.
Okay. I'm surprised to know that.
It's on the watch list, right?
It's on the 303D list. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Mojave River, Mojave Forks Reservoir outlet to the Upper Narrows has a fluoride listing, as does another section of the Mojave River. Then we have sulfates, Upper Narrows to Lower Narrows, as an impairment. And then the TDS is from the Upper Narrows to the Lower Narrows.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, so when I speak of these water body pollutant combinations, keep in mind that we have many of our rivers segmented into different segments, which is a very good thing to enable us to do, because only one segment may be impaired, and the upper headwaters may be clean. So the ability for us to segment the rivers enables us to focus just on the parts that are impaired.
Richard, just to be clear in my own mind, when we discovered eventually in Mojave that, for example, fluoride impairment is natural, will it be removed? That listing be removed?
Depending on how the natural, there's a policy being developed to enable us to do that very thing. It's tough to get a pollutant off the list, and there's natural resistance to that. So the short answer to your question is yes, but it won't be as easy as it sounds.
If I could add to that, there's a lot of discussion with our region and regional boards and state board about how to do this. And in fact, some of the listings that we, that Rich mentioned, that we set to the state board for consideration, we recommended that they not be listed because they're national. Unfortunately, because of the existing requirements and guidelines, they will likely be listed by the state board, even though we, regional board, they shouldn't be.
What was the sign?
It's a bigger problem, and it's, as Richard said, there's dialogue ongoing about, you know, how do we handle it? There might be a better way. There's a lot of discussion about just making the whole listing process a bit more workable.
Thank you. That's exactly right. While I'm here at the MAPS, I want to point out our six TMDLs, the water bodies that we have developed six TMDLs for. We only have six in our region. Heavenly Valley Creek. Actually, let me go in order of north to south. The Truckee River and Squaw Creek have TMDLs developed for them, and the pollutant for both of those water bodies is sediment. We come into the Tahoe Basin, and we find Heavenly Valley Creek and Blackwood Creek. Both of those pollutants are sediment. Lake Tahoe itself. And Bob Larson is going to follow me, and he's going to give you his excellent talk. I will save any of the surprises for him. And then finally, we have Indian Creek Reservoir. That's in Alpine County, south of us, and it is impaired by phosphorus. Cover the steps to produce a TMDL. The TMDL includes a plan to restore the water quality. This implementation plan.
With the exception of the Lake Tahoe TMDL, the implementation for our TMDLs takes about 20 years. That's the time period we think that the water quality can be restored, given the different implementation. Because of this long time period, it is critical that we track the progress for such long-term projects, hence these TMDL implementation status reports. So I've listed step one, or rather actually step zero, before you even get involved. You have these permits or these orders that require different implementers to do things in the field to restore the water quality. I call it program crossover because this is what the TMDL staff then coordinate with the regulatory staff, because they're the ones that issue these permits. So we want to make sure that the permits include requirements that are going to help clean up the water quality impairments that the TMDL report itself has mentioned. And the TMDL report suggests ways to do this. So we want these requirements to be in permits and orders unless it's done voluntarily. We'll review the implementation plans, look at the deadlines, is the evaluation schedule on track? We'll determine if they're completed or underway, are they postponed, are they canceled? What's the status of these actions in the field? And this requires coordination, of course, with the regulatory staff here at Lahontan, as well as the project implementers. Now I'm going to step away from my notes for just a minute. On this item I just say here on that second point, project implementers. That's a new term. We used to call them responsible parties. In fact, you'll see on the status reports a heading, responsible parties, because they were responsible for cleaning up or doing these stream restoration projects or whatever. Last night, Mr. Dias said that he respected water board staff and our ability to, or he liked the fact that we respect the implementers, the people that do the work in the field. And that was perfect timing for this talk because it was just recently staff came to me and said, let's quit calling them responsible parties. That's got negative connotations. In the enforcement world, we call people who are required to clean up contamination that they cause responsible parties. And I'm hemming and hawing, oh, I don't want to change our reports. They're so nice. They said, look, Rich, we work with these folks all the time. They're doing good things in the field. We shouldn't have a connotation that they're bad or have a blame or have a fault. I said, okay, fine, let's call them dischargers. They go, nope, they're not discharging. They're not discharging. They're actively working in the field to keep the sediment out of the water bodies. Don't call them dischargers. So after they hit me over the head with the 2x4, I certainly agree. We're going to call them project implementers. We'll change our status reports. For the rest of this talk, I'm going to get into my mind, they're not responsible parties, they're implementers. We're working in conjunction with them. And then finally, update the implementation reports, the status reports, as needed. Here's an example of erosion control feature. This one's in South Lake Tahoe, post-Angora fire. And like I pointed out, most of our TMDLs are for sediment impairment. So sediment control, of course, is a very big deal for our implementations. I've already mentioned the particular TMDLs that we have developed. Let me point out some of the, when I mentioned project implementers, I've grouped them into private and public. The private implementers that we have for these TMDLs include the ski resorts, Heavenly, Squaw Valley Ski Corp, North Star, Donner, Alpine Meadows. We also have the village at Squaw Valley as an implementer. For the public folks, we have Forest Service, both the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, as well as the Forest Service Tahoe National Forest. We have South Tahoe PUD, Public Utility District. Lot and staff ourselves can be considered implementers for some of these actions. Placer County has a role. Caltrans has a role. Town of Truckee also has a role, as do some state parks. So that's our list of implementers. I'm going to go back to the slide to mention, make a distinction. We say they're prepared by sediment. We mentioned Blackwood Creek bedded sediment. We throw the adjective in there, bedded sediment. The difference there is that the bedded sediment of Blackwood Creek is what disturbs the aquatic habitat on the bed of the stream. And the types of problems we've had at Blackwood Creek include gravel mining, historic gravel mining, they're not doing it anymore, but that type of disturbance has been a little bit different, a little more egregious than some of our normal disturbance, such as building a road, building a ski slope, that kind of thing. So Blackwood Creek has a little bit of a separate kind of a twist on the sediment impairment. Indian Creek Reservoir has phosphorus impairment, and it's related to eutrophication, such as low dissolved oxygen. South Tahoe PUD used to send treated wastewater from the Tahoe Basin into Indian Creek Reservoir. That stopped in the 1980s. Indian Creek Reservoir continues to suffer from naturally occurring sediments that are high in phosphorus as well. Okay, the right-hand column here. How good are we on track? How good are we doing with the work that's being done in the field? Most of our TMDLs are on track towards compliance. That's the good news. Squaw Creek shows mixed results. The biological conditions in Squaw Creek are improving, and you can see that on our chart, because these status reports are in your package. But there's a disturbing increase in the percentage of fine sediment particles. And again, these are the fine sediment particles that impair aquatic habitat. Now, the biological conditions in Squaw Creek are measured only every 2 years. This is by the folks at the Sierra Nevada Aquatic Research Lab, SNARL. So some of these status reports will not be updated every year. We're only going to update these when significant changes are made. Truckee River, it's in compliance. Truckee River has attained its sediment target since its adoption. In fact, it attained its TMDL target even before it was adopted. So staff will evaluate whether the current target is appropriate. Now, we'll probably start that evaluation in July when we have completed our current fiscal year's TMDL work. We're in the process of work planning right now and considering the appropriateness of the TMDL target for the Truckee River is one of our high priority work tasks.
Mr. Booth?
Yes.
On Truckee River, what actions were taken for it to meet its target?
I would call it normal housekeeping chores about folks that have any kind of a disturbance, primarily the county, the city, town of Truckee, and Caltrans. And they do the normal types of sediment control efforts to keep the sediment out of the river. Nothing really changed by what they have been doing from before the TMDL was adopted to after the TMDL was adopted. Therefore, we conclude that the target itself isn't appropriately measuring the sediment impairment. The Truckee River Watershed Council folks came to you at the June meeting in Bishop, made a presentation pointing out from their field work they had done, from some sampling they had done, that focused on particular reaches of the Truckee River that showed sediment concerns, particularly bedded sediment, fine sediment, whereas other parts of the river, not a problem. So I don't know the history of the TMDL or the political motivation or any of the factors that go into why you do a TMDL for the Truckee River at the time of 2009. Mm-hmm. I wasn't involved in the program, and I probably don't want to know, but it was developed at the time, and if I could give some history on why it was done the way it was.
I'm glad to help. I'm Doug Smith, supervising geologist in Tahoe. So the Truckee River TMDL is a sediment TMDL, and as Rich was saying, we have determined or are evaluating that target right now, and it appears that it's not the appropriate target. And if you recall, last year in Bishop, the Truckee River Watershed Council gave a presentation to state and show a lot of their data that is showing that that's not the appropriate target, and that Truckee River, though it appears it meets this TMDL target, it's still impaired. And so we are working with them and working with our data to see how we can revise that appropriately. Now, the TMDL also includes a lot of targets. Targets for the town of Truckee to achieve, some actions for them to implement. There are targets for Caltrans to achieve. There are targets for the U.S. Forest Service to achieve. The town of Truckee and Placer County and Caltrans have achieved, as far as we know, all of their targets. The Forest Service has not. There's a lot of legacy roads that need to be addressed, and so there are a lot of actions that still need to be taken. So we feel that although our one target in the TMDL appears the river is not impaired, it's actually impaired, and we need to go through the process of revising it. We'll almost be another TMDL.
So as that process takes place, will there be a dialogue with the Forest Service and others who will have to implement practices to assist in this?
Yes, we will have that ongoing dialogue with them. Right now, we believe, in our assessment, there may not be a need to change the implementation plan. All the implementation actions, which are non-point source focused, should probably remain. But that will be part of this process.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Appreciate that. I'm planning on going through these status reports, not in great detail, but if you want to jump ahead and go to bait stamp 9-36, you'll see an example of Truckee River implementation measures, both 9-36 as well as the subsequent page. Road sand applications are concerned. Ski resort best management practices. Dirt roads that need to be maintained or decommissioned, and legacy sites that need to be restored. These are the types of implementation for the Truckee River watershed. And of course, you can find these status reports on our website from our homepage. Click on the TMDL link. It'll take you to our TMDL page, and each TMDL has a link to each report. So the TMDL impairments are listed, like I say, on that bait stamp page for the Truckee, and it's similar for our other TMDLs because they're all listed for sediment, with the exception of Indian Creek Reservoir. And I cannot resist explaining a little bit of what's being done at Indian Creek Reservoir because it's a cool engineering solution. This is a picture of a speece cone. Dissolved oxygen is one of the indicators for water quality at Indian Creek Reservoir. There are several target values for dissolved oxygen. We of course, want there to be high dissolved oxygen. Otherwise, the reservoir will continue to eutrophy. Dissolved oxygen targets include interim versus long-term. We have 30-day means. We have one-day minimums. These are all in the TMDL, in your status reports for Indian Creek Reservoir. So to raise the dissolved oxygen concentration in the reservoir to these target levels, in 2008, South Tahoe PUD installed a hypomimetic oxygenation system. So this system consists of an oxygen generator that feeds oxygen to this speece cone that's pictured here. The speece cone is submerged into the deepest part of the reservoir at about 32 feet down, and the dissolved oxygen enters the water that's in the speece cone, and the speece cone is designed to help get that oxygen to dissolve in the water, so that it's released from the speece cone at the bottom of the reservoir, and then the dissolved oxygen rises through the reservoir to increase the dissolved oxygen concentration. And there's equipment on the shore that supplies the oxygen to the speece cone. The Indian Creek Reservoir experienced fish kills in the 1970s and the 1980s due to ammonia and low dissolved oxygen. The dissolved oxygen levels have since increased, and they exceed the interim dissolved oxygen target of 4 milligrams per liter as a direct result of the installation of this speece cone. This thing seems to be working. South Tahoe PUD has installed this voluntarily. They received grant money to do this, $800,000, in fact, from federal funding to install the system, but they spend $2,000 to $3,000 each month of their own money to operate this thing. You can barely make out some bubbles that show up right there as a result of this oxygenation. Now, when the water coming out of the speece cone is not in bubbles, it's dissolved, it's not visible. But I believe as this water goes through the water column and comes to the surface, the lack of pressure will then make the bubbles come out. so that such that they're visible. Okay. Now I'm going to spend the next couple slides going through the status reports themselves, or at least explaining the format to you, and that will conclude my talk after I do that. Well, you can learn a lot from these status reports. The next few slides, I want to walk through the types of information you can find in these reports. You may follow along with any of the TMDLs in your enclosures, 1 through 5, of your agenda package. I've already mentioned the Truckee River one. It starts on 9-34. Heavenly Valley Creek is on 9-6, if you want to follow along with that one. Indian Creek Reservoir, 9-13. Squaw's on 9-23. Blackwood's on 9-29. Now, if you look at Blackwood Creek status report, you'll notice it does not have a chart, because the key features include what the water body is, of course, a map of where it is, some background information, and number 4 is a visual display of conditions. We like to display how well the water quality is improving with the chart. Blackwood doesn't have one. Its implementation measures tend to be stream restoration, vegetation cover. That doesn't lend itself well for a visual display. But all the other ones you'll notice on their first page have a plot or a chart over time of whatever the key target or indicator that we're trying to track, that it will be displayed. And we list on the first page any permits that are applicable. Subsequent pages have more detail, including the features you see here. Target, indicators, it's got a schedule of how we're doing. Project implementers, formerly known as responsible party, who's reporting on the progress, and then staff comments on whether we think it's in compliance or on track. Quick distinguishment between target and indicator. An indicator is a feature that defines the water quality, such as biological health. An indicator, at Squaw Creek, for example, there's an indicator for cold freshwater habitat. Now, a target is typically a numeric value or a concentration that the implementation is supposed to achieve. So the TMDL target for biological health at Squaw Creek is a biological condition score, for example. It's an actual number that the Sierra Nevada Aquatic Research Lab folks determine based on observations they make in Squaw Creek on the benthic macro invertebrates. They use a specific set of protocols to quantify these biological conditions. And then, on some of the status reports, we have data that supports these plots and charts. We give you details with even more charts, and then we'll sometimes compare indicators of that water body, the TMDL is for, to other water bodies, other similar ones. Now, in the late revision, I showed you a one-page handout for the Truckee River that I said was on State Board's webpage. State Board wants to have status reports like these. They want to convey information to the public. They post these on their website, but they only want one page. And that's very frustrating for staff who work on these things day in and day out to try to put everything on one page. We do what State Board says, because after all, it's State Board. We do what they say. We write these up for them. They post them on their pages. And they typically contain the stuff that we have on ours, one-pagers, on the first page. But, of course, these subsequent pages that I'm explaining to you and showing to you is where the meat of the details are. This is where, if you want to find out what's going on in these TMDLs, that's where you go. And like I say, we update these when there are significant changes as appropriate. They give as much of an accurate picture of the activities in the field, plus they enhance our goal of public transparency. We're telling the public what we're doing. We're proud of the work we do. We're proud of the work that the project implementers do. And this is one way we can show it. This concludes my presentation. I'll be glad to answer any additional questions you may have.
Are there any questions?
No additional questions.
I do have one on your outreach to the public. Many areas of government tend to get real technical, and I think it is beneficial if we're able to draw the nexus for how it might affect the general public, particularly as it relates to disadvantaged communities that may even have a harder ability to grasp because of language issues and cultural differences. How is there a way that we could say, okay, we are evaluating this TMDL in this area, we invite you to participate? General public would say, I don't have time for that, I don't understand that. But if we say, we invite you to participate because the end result may be X and affect you in this way, I mean, I think there's the opportunity here to even do more outreach in that way, particularly with the disadvantaged community. So I just plant that as food for thought as we look at greater opportunities for collaboration in the future.
Sure, right off the bat, and anyone else is welcome to chime in. We can certainly add an outreach portion to our reports up front, for example, that say, contact this person for more information, and then if we have any, if we actually go out and talk to the people, we can certainly do that.
Well, my objective is not to create more of a burden on staff, but if we can articulate at the beginning how an individual homeowner, how a residential community might be impacted by some of these activities.
Oh, I see. Name the people specifically in some form.
If you are a homeowner in this area,
right,
you may be impacted by this. You may benefit from the results of this activity. Help draw the nexus to empower them with knowledge, information, and the opportunity to understand why they may wish to participate in something.
I think an example would be, when we tell me if I capture this correctly, when we revisit the TMDL for the trucking, based on this new science that shows that a sediment is causing more harm to the fisheries than we originally thought, that we reach out to the community to get involved, not just Caltrans, the city, the county, but the community, because there's other parts of the community that probably would care about the fisheries, be interested in this new science, and like to be part of this dialogue going forward. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Right. Certainly there was that involvement for developing the TMDLs, some watersheds more than others. Mm-hmm. But that's a good point. Once we finish our TMDL and we've got people out there in the field working, we think everything's fine. But if we ignore or don't keep updated the folks that are affected, I can see that would be a missed opportunity. Sure.
We could just very easily include it in the outreach materials.
I think it's all how you relay the information in a more understandable way so the public goes, oh, aha, that's interesting. That's why. The cone and helps fishers for people. Isn't that popular fishing spot?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, those people who fish there, and I believe it's in that near Washoe property, they would care. It's just a different way, I think, of getting people involved and why we're doing what we're doing.
Right. Yes, that's exactly it. I mean, the more input or at least knowledge we get out there among the layperson, the better overall our programs will work.
Good, and obviously feel free for any other comments you have out later down the road to email me for your suggestions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, let's take a 10-minute break.